Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
Julia Child presents the Chicken Sisters. Miss Broiler, Miss Fryer, Miss Roaster, Miss Capernet, Miss Stewart, and old Madam Hen. But we're spotlighting Miss Roaster of the Year.
What, pray tell, is that all about? If, depending on your age, you know exactly what voice that is. So famous, brought back recently, by the way, in a movie called Julia, Julia. But that, of course, was the actual voice of Julia Child, one of the just the great chefs, the woman who probably popularized cooking more so than anybody else. But that's my view. We're going to get the view of some other folks. And what brings us to talk about this in today's podcast is a new book called France is a Feast: The Photographic Journey of Paul and Julia Child. And what's fascinating about this is, no, it is not a bio, so to speak, of Julia Child. It was not written for that purpose, but rather it recognizes that her husband, Paul, was quite the fine photographer. And this is a tribute to both of them, but really giving Paul Child, I think, his due. Joining me to talk about it are the authors and editors, I suppose, of this book, Alex Prudhomme. He actually is the great nephew of Paul Child, the co-author with Julia Child of the bestseller, If You're a Cook, You've Got the Book, My Life in France, which, by the way, inspired that movie you probably saw with Meryl Streep called Julia, Julia. And he also recently wrote The French Chef in America, Julia Child's Second Act. Alex, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Paul. Glad to be here.
So great to talk about this book. Also joining us, your co-author and co-editor of this book, Katie Pratt. She is a photography curator, so very important for this particular book. And her parents were among Paul and Julia Child's closest friends. So she knows from which she speaks. She lives now in Napa, California, where she's involved in the art glass movement. She produces her own wine. She'll be sending each of you a bottle of wine if you just send her an email. I just made that part up. But Katie Pratt, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
How much wine do you produce, by the way, Katie?
Right now, I'm in very small, early stages of one barrel, which is 25 cases.
Oh, that just gets you through the holidays and the dinner table with family, right?
Yes, and then some. I have enough to send you.
Okay, pretty much. So, hey, let's talk about France as a Feast. As I said, I saw this book on the desk of the morning show executive producer at the number one show in Chicago, and I said, how cool is this? And unlike probably a lot of people that will interview you, I actually read the book. And that's not a comment about you. That's a comment about people that they don't read the books they're supposed to. But I do. And what's really cool about this is, first of all, if you're a photography lover, that is just filled with. That's actually kind of what intrigued me and attracted me. But in addition, there's a lot of text in this book about their story. Alex, let me just start with you. If you don't know Julia Child, maybe you've just heard of her, but really this is an introduction not just to her, but it's a way of saying, and you really ought to know her husband as well.
Yeah, that's right, Paul. Julia and I worked on her memoir more than a decade ago, and Katie and I see this book, France is a Feast, as a visual extension of the memoir. It tells roughly the same story. It's about how Paul and Julia went to France in 1948 and lived in Paris and Marseille until 1954. He worked at the U.S. Embassy. She was an anonymous diplomatic housewife who became strangely fixated on French food. And this book is told from Paul's perspective. It gives his biography. He had a very interesting life. He called it a curry of a life. And it sort of gives him his due as a photographer of note. And Julia always felt that he didn't get the credit that he was deserved during his lifetime. And so when Katie approached her and asked if she could do a book of Paul's photos as a kind of tribute to Paul, Julia immediately said yes.
Fantastic. And Katie, and I'm guessing, I'm sure you both took part in everything, but I'm kind of thinking, Alex, maybe you did a lot of the writing, and Katie, you had a lot to do with photograph selection and placement. Is that fair enough?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the sense I had. And so, Katie, let me come to you, because here's what I found. Before I got into the book, I didn't know what I was in for, and I didn't look ahead. I just kind of wanted to start the book. And so you get a lot of narrative and a lot of, you know, about their life and what's going on, and it was really interesting. And then you get to certain chapters, like a chapter on Paris, a chapter on Marseille, and they become – there is no writing in those chapters. I mean, it's the photography exhibit, if you will. It's a portfolio. Talk to me, Katie, about what led you guys to decide that certain chapters needed to provide some narrative and certain chapters just needed to speak through photograph?
Well, that's a good question. Well, originally I had collected photographs for a more of an art book. So I had that grouping already available. And then when I started working with Alex and we incorporated the wonderful biographical text with, there were so many additional images that were appropriate to illustrate the story. So it's a combination of, as you said, the art exhibit in a book, the monograph type book, and also the photographic illustrations in the text.
Which of the two of you, Katie, I'll stick with you, which of the two of you sort of had access to the photography to kind of come up with this idea? One of you, maybe both of you, but one of you had to know this stuff exists, and did you know each other prior to that, Katie?
Yes. Well, we both had access to the materials, which are at an archive in Cambridge, Massachusetts, at the Schlesinger Library, which is part of Harvard University. And I've been working with the materials for a number of years from the photograph angle, and Alex has been working with the letters and other materials for his books, his Julia's memoir and other research he's done. So we combined our efforts, and we have both grew up with Julia and Paul, so we both have known each other, but hadn't really known each other that well until we got involved in the book.
Yeah. Alex, as I look through the photographs, by the way, and I assume this is perhaps where narrative spoke to you as well, somebody might think, if they haven't seen the book yet — they will after we talk about it — but if they haven't seen the book yet, they might think, oh, so it's a bunch of family shots and, you know, sitting around the table and whatever. It is not that at all. There are some portraits. In fact, a fairly sexy portrait of, if I look at the photograph right, there's one of Julia Child in front of a window, all shadowed, whatever, but she doesn't appear to be dressed. But that's just the way it looked to me.
Your vision is 20/20.
All right. And in case people are wondering, it is her younger days. So, yeah, that's part of that.
Actually, that's an important point. I mean, one of the things I love about this book is it shows Julia as I mentioned, as an anonymous housewife before she was Julia Child. So this is, you see Julia in France at the moment when she is being inspired, when she's learning how to cook and speak French, and she is in the process of becoming the person we would know a decade later as Julia. But this is, you know, even in these photographs, some of which are just snapshots, others of which are much more composed, artistic shots, you see Julia in her gestational phase when she is becoming Julia Child, and it's really kind of an intimate look into their lives. I mean, she was really Paul's muse, and as was Paris and Marseille. You know, I think his first love of his life was Julia, and the second love of his life was France and its food. And so this, in a sense, this book is a love letter to Julia and France and its food.
Indeed it is. And if people are architecture fans, it's another reason to look at that. You don't even have to like food. The architecture of this, there's a picture that I saw of Sacré-Cœur from Rue de la Bombe in Montmartre and taken in 1950. And the depth of some of these photos, the architectural portrayal, once again, as you said, people might get this book thinking, oh, this is Paul's love letter to Julia. That might be part of it. But as you say, it's a love letter before she was the Julia we all know. And it was a love letter to France and parts of France.
Yeah, and he had a wide range of interests, and he was always experimenting with his technique. He shot everything from kind of surrealistic photographs of, you know, multiple teapots or copper kettles or whatever it is, to, as you mentioned, architectural photographs of the Eiffel Tower and of the bridges, reflections in windows and in water, portraits. There's some humor in there. There's a great shot of a man popping out of a manhole cover on the street, which is works graphically as a photograph, but is also just a kind of a funny shot. Lots of shots of people, you know, whether they're fishermen along the Seine River or the working men and women of Paris, the fishermen of Marseille. A bit on the food, although it's interesting that he didn't really focus on Julia and her food at that point because, let's remember, this was the time when she was still learning how to cook. But they would go to restaurants and cafes and little holes in the wall and, you know, eat almost every day and just wander Paris. And so the photographs really encompass a broad swath of life and include their trips into the countryside where they took picnics and they found vineyards and castles. And it's a great collection, and Katie gets a lot of credit for culling through literally thousands of images and picking out these mere 225 of them.
Way to give Katie the tough part.
I know, right? That was smart of me, eh?
Now, this may have been a marketing thing. I'm thinking, because I've written a bunch of books. I have a new one coming out in April, by the way. I'll plug that some other time. But what caught my attention, of course, is, and what caught my attention when I first saw the book, well, the photograph on the front of the book, it's Julia. It's not Julia and Paul. It's not Paris. It's Julia Child. Katie, I don't know if this was your guy's decision or I have to believe it was a publisher saying, look, we need Julia Child on the front. That's what that's what's going to catch people's attention. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, that's partially true. Yes. However, Julia was in so many of Paul's photographs, so this was just another great photograph that illustrates his ability to create a strong composition, whatever the subject, and Julia happened to often be his subject.
But when you went through the photos, Katie, were there a lot of photos with, because as you say, your parents were among their closest friends. Did you find lots of photos with your parents and them?
Not in those years. My parents didn't meet the Childs until they moved to Cambridge in 1961.
Ah, okay. So we see the distinction. Alex, this is totally off topic, but I have to bring it up because your last name is Prudhomme, but it's spelled the same, but it's got a little accent in there, which the famous chef Paul Prudhomme didn't have in his name. The owner with his wife Kay of a place called Kay Paul's in New Orleans in the French Quarter, also very famous. Just I always thought he looked like Dom DeLuise and one of those famous TV chefs. But I have to ask, are you related to Paul Prudhomme, who's also one of the great chefs?
That's right. Yeah, he was a Cajun chef. He weighed 350 pounds, and he would scoot around on a little scooter. And in fact, he had a K. Paul's branch here in New York City, where I live. So one day I went by and introduced myself. I said, hey, chef, do you think we are related? We have this very similar last name, Prudhomme, very French. And he bought me a Cajun martini, which is basically a giant jar full of booze. And we talked it over, and he said, well, now you spell your name with an apostrophe in the middle. That means prudent man. You're a smart guy, aren't you? And I said, I can be smart sometimes. And then he said, I don't use that apostrophe. That means stubborn mule. And I said, well, you know, I think you're pretty smart, and I'm pretty stubborn. So, yeah, we're probably related way back.
I love. Well, I have to just say, my quick Paul Prudhomme story, and I apologize for this, we were talking about Julia Child in the book, but I was in his restaurant once. And I was a big fan of his, and I sent a note back somebody to go back just to see if I could say hi to him. That's all I wanted to do was just say hi. Well, he had me brought back into the kitchen, kept me there all night as he was training 11 Russian chefs, and kept me there as he was showing them how to – and I was tasting caviar, all sorts of different things. I mean, it was just – the whole world was family to him. And I have a funny feeling, and I'll shift it back to the book, Alex, with this question. It's almost as though when you're a chef, when you're in that – like they are and you're famous, you almost have to be friendly to the world, right? The whole world is your family when they're cooking your recipes.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, food is a great medium of communication. And Julia was a great communicator and a great connector of people. And, you know, when you went out to dinner with her, she would always the restaurant would always put you in the biggest table in the middle of the dining room. And then afterwards, you would go back into the kitchen with her, and she would talk to literally every single person there, starting with the head chef and working her way down the line to the dishwasher. And she was such a good example to me on how to live your life because she just loved people, and she was very inquisitive. And so when she got to the dishwasher, that was the person whose story she didn't know. She usually knew the chef's story, but she would always ask the dishwasher, now, how did you get here? You know, what's your name? What's your plan? You know, and she just just loved it. And I think in the back of my mind, that's kind of lodged as a great example of somebody using her intelligence, bringing people into the fold, including everybody. And I'm sure it's one of the reasons I became a journalist myself, because she was clearly just having so much fun.
Katie, was and Julia died in 2004, I think.
Yeah.
I also remember reading, she was almost 92, and I remember reading the last thing she ate was French onion soup before she died. I don't know if you knew that.
Yes, that's true. Yep.
Okay, which is one of my favorite foods. But anyway, Katie, let me ask you, the relationship between Julia and Paul, as you guys said when you approached her to attribute to write this book, and she was much older than Paul. No, I'm sorry. Paul was older than her, like 12
Paul
years older than her.
Paul was a decade older than Julia. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was quite the love affair. Did she sort of say, and when you do this book, Katie, I mean, make Paul the star. This is about him. Or did she recognize that this it's always going to be about them and her?
She absolutely believed that Paul was very talented, and she was thrilled to have when I approached her about doing the book, she was thrilled about the concept and gave me permission to do the book, and so I don't feel like she felt that she had to promote Paul, because his work speaks for itself.
Yeah. What a great tribute this is. By the way, on the back cover, there's a picture of the two of them, again, very, very young, sitting on their terrace. And, well, actually, Alex, the pictures where they're both in them, that means somebody else took them, right? Or did he have a timer or something? Do we know?
Well, that back picture, you'll notice he is slightly out of focus, and he seems to be just sitting down in his seat. So I infer from that it was a self-timed photograph. You kids out there may not remember, but back in the day before selfies and digital cameras, he would shoot with, you know, an old-fashioned camera with actual film in it. There
in fact,
was a little
several.
Timer on it.
You wrote that
you
he had, like, sometimes
take a picture and run around in front of the lens and hope for the best, but you wouldn't really know what you got until the film was developed. And I love that shot on the back, because it's two of them just, they're smiling at each other, they're in love, they're having a meal together, they're on their little terrace in Marseille, and you know, I think had he known it was slightly out of focus, I bet he would have taken another shot. But he didn't. And, you know, there you have the evidence of their, you know, just an intimate little moment together.
And you wrote, by the way, in the book that he used to walk around. I mean, again, today people take out their iPhone and they're taking pictures. He used to have like two or three cameras around his neck all the time.
Yeah, he would rarely leave the house without at least one camera, sometimes two or three slung around his neck. And one of their favorite things to do, and we recreate a scene in the book where we talk about this, but he and Julia together used to love to walk around Paris, and they preferred to stay off the big boulevards, which were kind of boring, and they knew them, and explore the little byways and narrow streets and nooks and crannies of Paris, and get lost and then find their way back again. And they actually had a map where they would block off the parts of Paris that they had explored, so they could see where they were going. And they would return sometimes to the same scene at different times of day or different seasons to see if the light had shifted and whether that would add a certain mood or a different look to something. And so they were constantly experimenting. And one of the funny quotes that I found was Julia talks about how she was 6'2" and Paul was about 5'10". So she would tower over him, and he would instruct her to use her long body and arms to block the sun from his lens so he could take a shot. So she was kind of a sunshade for him.
I love that.
And a prop.
And a prop.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, kind of reason that there's humor, humor in there somewhere. Listen, if you're a fan of photography, if you're a fan of food, if you're a fan of Julia Child, there's just so many reasons to check this out. And if you haven't seen or are going to see the movie Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep, which I love, it was a great movie anyway. Trust me, you will see that, and then you will want to take a look at this photographic journey. The book is called France is a Feast, The Photographic Journey of Paul and Julia Child. I'm assuming, you know, I tell everybody just go to Amazon, although I prefer when people go to their local bookstores and support the small businesses. But is there any special place people should get this book? Alex, or just Amazon, or
I would say anywhere you like to buy books. Although, like you, I always support the independent bookstores. They're very important. They're part of our cultural life, and they keep communities going. And the great thing about going to a bookstore as opposed to website is that you stumble over stuff that you would never have thought you would find and you didn't even know you were looking for.
Absolutely.
And
true.
That makes it more of an adventure, and I think that's something that Julia was always interested in.
I feel the need to speak French and say merci beaucoup to both Katie Prack and Alex Prudhomme. Thank you so much. The book, France is a Feast, really a treat. I'm so glad I just tripped over it and then pursued being able to talk to you guys. Thanks for your time. Congratulations on the great book. Katie, raise a glass of wine for both of us as soon as you break open that barrel.
Thank you, and bon appetit.
Yeah,
bon appetit.
Merci, Paul. Bon appetit.
Okay, au revoir, mes amis.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Wonderland.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow's glistening. A beautiful sight, oh, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland.
Ah, yes, it is winter. It is holiday time. Pretty sure that was Dean Martin singing Winter Wonderland. Love Dean Martin. And good job to my producer for picking that song. And we're going to talk a little bit about Winter Wonderfest that is coming up at Navy Pier. You live in Chicago or you're visiting Chicago, you just want to check this out because I think a lot of people think Navy Pier is a place you go only over the summer and then we lock it up, but we don't. Let's find out exactly what happens there. Joining me is the spokesperson for Navy Pier, Lydia Jordan Parnell. And Lydia, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for talking a little bit about the Winter Wonderfest.
Thank you so much for having me.
So am I correct in saying Navy Pier does not close its doors once winter hits?
You are absolutely correct. We are open year-round, and to really show that off this year, we have our 17th annual Fifth Fairbank Winter Wonderfest. There are some really great additions to the fest this year. One notable element is that each ticket purchase is elevated with a ride on the Centennial Wheel, also
wow.
A year-round attraction here at Navy Pier.
Well, don't they get a little cold in those gondolas?
Actually, you don't. With our Centennial Wheel, the gondolas are enclosed and they are heated.
Ooh.
So it makes for a nice toasty ride.
I had to make sure about that. And I know, so obviously it's a family event, and there's not just the Centennial Wheel, but there's bumper cars, right? I mean, talk to me about some of the rides people get to play.
Correct. So new this year, we have Dashers, Crashers, Bumper Cars, which is becoming a fan favorite attraction in Fifth Fairbank Winter Wonderfest. We have more than two dozen rides and attractions. Beautiful decor, nearly 500 decorated Christmas trees with 25,000 ornaments, 170,000 square feet of Winter Wonder magic. There is literally something for everyone to really get into the holiday spirit.
The fun thing that I like when I'm at Navy Pier for no particular reason is you'll just kind of catch different performances, different events, different things going on there, and I can't imagine that during the Winter Wonderfest that kind of thing doesn't play out as well.
Well, we have tons of other offerings and opportunities to get into the holiday spirit. One I'd like to know is Sequin Chicago. It's our free fall and winter concert series made possible by the Paul M. Angel Family Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
We have a really stellar concert coming up, and I want to call out December 20th, a Blues Christmas, Alligator Records, a huge blues label, well-known across the world, is going to be performing. So there are a lot of different opportunities to experience different elements of Navy Pier between the Centennial Wheel Ride, Fifth Fairbank Winter Wonderfest, and some of our free programming. So I encourage people to go to navypier.org to check us out.
So there was actually something else that I know you have that I was kind of hinting at.
Yes.
And that was the aerial performances that happened throughout where people are just kind of flaming. Yeah, that's kind of what I had in mind that I thought you were thinking of. You just had other good stuff.
We've got tons of great stuff. We do have phenomenal aerialist performers that come out on the weekends in the afternoon. So keep an eye out for that when you come there.
And they're like floating on, right? It's like these ribbons and they're in midair and they're floating around and stuff?
That's correct. It's a really almost like majestic experience to see people coming down from the ceiling. Very beautiful.
I got to tell you, I did a special on Looking Glass Theater a while back, and part of Looking Glass happens, this is absolutely irrelevant to what we're talking about, and Looking Glass works with the Artist Gymnasium because Looking Glass Theater, which isn't far from Navy Pier, it's over by Water Tower, but mm-hmm. they do a lot of acrobatics and gymnastics and things. So part of the special was that they had me doing some of the things that you're talking about, like, climbing silks and ribbons and different things. I got to tell you, It might look like it's easy. I could not do it. That stuff is tough. So when you're there at Navy Pier and you see some of these aerial performances, just in case you think any of it looks easy, it is not.
They do really make it look effortless, but a lot of training and practice goes into making it look that way.
So for people that are visiting the area or don't go to Navy Pier a lot, what about parking? Is that a pain?
I think that we've got tons of parking options, so check out NavyPier.org to plan your visit in advance. But I'd say that it's totally doable, and there's a lot of great offerings once you're down here.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. And what about the days that this winter, Winter Wonderfest, how long will it run?
So we're open now. We run through January 7th. Check us out online for operation hours. We're going to be running all throughout kind of this winter season, so there's plenty of opportunities to come down and pay us a visit.
Can people also, isn't there a skating rink? Can't people just come and skate?
There is. So part of those more than two dozen rides and attractions is the Chicago Blackhawks indoor ice skating rink. So it is indoor, so you can come out and enjoy ice skating as part of that ticket to Fifth Burbank Winter Wonderfest.
Fantastic. And by the way, I looked at some of the little artifacts about this, some of the little facts about it, and there's more than 250,000 lights that just kind of light everything up. That's a lot of light.
A lot of lights. They're beautiful. It's just a gorgeous space with twinkling lights and really all the elements of holiday fun. Santa's going to be there. I mean, you really got the gambit of holiday family fun at Fifth Third Bank Winter Wonderfest.
All right, I think we got a lot of people excited. Give me the website again so people can – is it a good idea to get your tickets before you go, right?
I recommend that. And you can also save some money by buying your tickets online in advance at www.navypier.org.
Okay. It sounds like a great time through January 7th, right?
Correct.
You don't want to miss this. It's just great fun. And what a great Chicago thing. You can't do that anywhere else. You can only do that here.
Yeah, we're the only place.
Fantastic. Navy Pier's Winter Wonderfest. Lydia Jarda, Jordan Parnell, thank you so much for telling me about that. And I'm going to try and get out there to see it. And I'm just going to probably pick a night when it's warm.
Yep. And, I mean, it's all indoors, so you can be nice and toasty and have some winter fun as well.
Oh, good. You just fixed that problem, too. There wasn't one problem I gave you that you didn't fix, including the heated gondolas. I'm good to go.
Yep, we're good to go.
All right. Thank you. Check it all out, folks. What a great event. Thank you.
Thank you.
My friend, I haven't seen you in a while. It's been far too long since you hit me with that. And I know I shouldn't bite, and I know I shouldn't bend. But Amy, you are my only friend. Hello, my love, I haven't let myself be bad. You're the sweetest sugar that a girl ever had. And I know it isn't real, and I know it's just pretend. But Amy, you are my only friend.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I'm loving that song so much. I almost forgot to interrupt it to introduce the guest because I love this woman. She is so incredible, and she's got a great event coming up. Not only a great event, but a great project that she's working on. Her name is Jess Godwin. She is just nationally, I'm going to say internationally acclaimed songwriter, singer, actress. Saw her out at Writers Theater and Company. She's written so many wonderful songs, and I think what I love about her the best is the fact that she's not just an artist for the sake of being an artist. The truth is, you once said, Jess, that unless there's a purpose to doing what you're doing, you just don't want to do it. You've got to be driven, and you're driven by a greater purpose, and I so respect that. Joining me is singer-songwriter Jess Godwin. Jess, good to talk
to you. Hi.
Hey, so we've talked before. We've interviewed in various places, but we're doing it now because you've got a really cool event based on an important project that you're doing that's going to assist students, kids, that's what's driving you on this one. Tell my listeners what's coming up this coming weekend in Chicago.
Great. I'll first of all, thank you. That was so nice.
Well, I meant it.
I don't always get nice introductions like that. But I have a show coming up this weekend at the Athenaeum Theater. It's called Mislabeled. It's a one-woman musical I wrote, which I'm really excited about. This is the first time I've ever done anything like this. But it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and all ticket proceeds are going towards my Shameless Workshop program. And the Shameless Workshop launched a year ago in CPS thanks to a grant through 3Arts. And I go in and talk to middle school and high school kids about shame stigmas, jealousy, sadness, anger. And based on the class discussions and free writes, I help the class write a song for the first time in under an hour. It's so much fun. It's silly. It's incredible to hear what these students have to say. I've just, like, it has just opened so much in the past year in amazing ways. We went to CPS last spring. We shot a short documentary and released it this fall. And based on that, like, I went to Dallas. I just went to Italy to work with students. And then...
That was rough.
Oh, no, I know. Oh, it's terrible. I had to go to Italy.
Thank goodness somebody got to Italy. I don't know.
And then we're going to circle back around and start going back to Chicago schools through communities and schools. So what's really exciting is we have all of these schools lined up, and, you know, there's such a need for arts programs in Chicago, specifically on the South Side in Chicago. But what's so fantastic about the show this weekend is every single ticket proceed is going towards enabling me to bring Shameless into all of these schools in January. I am just, like, beside myself. I'm so excited. I'm excited to do the show this weekend because it's about my life. I'm excited that people are so stoked on the program. I'm also bringing in young adults and young people to the show. Each night I'm featuring a student that I helped write their first song in the past year in a program called 60 Minute Song. So I get to, I don't know, it's just I get to uplift young people in a couple different ways, while still, you know, doing my own art, which is also really exciting for me.
It's so magical that you've done this. You know, when we first met, it was our mutual friend Brandon James of America's Got Talent who introduced us, and Brandon was performing at the Auditorium Theater, invited you to join him. I shoved my way into that show, but that's another story. But there we were.
You were the highlight.
There we were all on stage. And but anyway, that's when I first fell in love with you and just the work that you did. And then you did a one-woman show. Well, it wasn't really a one-woman show, was you? But you, of course, involved all of these at-risk youth and all of these folks. But here's the thing. You've got a great career and a lot of success. In fact, some of your music appears, well, I'm thinking of one song especially, that people actually have heard on television, right? Tell us what that is.
Right. I've had songs licensed on TV, but the one that had the biggest splash was my song Fool Me Once. It was licensed on Dance Moms 3 weekends in a row. Maddie Ziegler, Kendall, and Chloe all dance routines to it in Dance Moms. And based on that, just crazy things happen. Kristen Chenoweth is a fan of Dance Moms, and she heard my song and became a fan of me and then invited me to sing a duet with her on the Chicago Theater stage. Just what crazy things happened.
Yeah. I was actually just about to tell that.
You
took it from me, but I was about to tell that. No, it's fine. I was going to tell that story. But here's Kristen Chenoweth. Doesn't get more successful than that, than Broadway. And to get in one day, you get this phone call. Hi, it's Kristen. You're like, yeah, right. And not only just hi, it's Kristen, but I love you and I need you to appear on stage with me. And you and Kristen did the song For Good from Wicked. And you've got this kind of surreal existence going on. But here's my point. Aside from all that good stuff, you could say, I want to be a songwriter, a singer, an actress. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to become rich. I'm Barbara Streisand. I'm going to do this kind of thing. But you don't. I want to go back to that mission in life. And you're doing it in this program of Mislabeled and the whole Shameless workshop. If you're not driven by helping the community and helping people, you don't seem to want to be bothered with it. And I mean that in a good way.
Thank you. Well, I don't know. I think that I get distracted by the siren song of success. And every time I find myself going in that direction of I'm making this so I get signed, or I'm making this so I get a viral video, it just, I'm never fulfilled. I don't think I'm being true to myself. But if I'm creating just for the sake of creating, or if I'm creating with the purpose of helping other people create, it feels right. And it's also like, you know, every day is a struggle, you know, because it's easy to want to fall into like, follow me on Instagram, all that, because our whole society is like me. But I think that it's just a constant practice to remind myself that like the things that really make me happy are empowering other people, specifically young women. I read a book about being an artist last year, and it said something about mission. And it said, you know, you have to figure out what your mission is, and if your art does not focus on that mission, it'd be more important. It would be better for you. Sorry, I'm not articulating myself well. But if your art is not aligned with your mission, it would be better for you to quit your art completely and just do your mission. And that really resonated with me. So I feel like everything I'm doing now, I'm really, really consciously trying to keep it on the mission and keep it on the mission. And in doing that, I'm finding myself happier, which, you know, that's what we all want, right?
And every time I do hear from you or see what you're doing, it's always great because it's all a related mission, but it's a new project. And the question when I look at it is not, oh, where is Jess singing? The question is going to be, who's she helping now? Because that's where it ends up.
Oh,
well, it's true.
Sweet.
It's true. All right. So people that want to check you out, Jess, first of all, people who just want to know more, people who just said, wow, this woman is cool. I want to learn more about her. Where do we just learn generally about Jess Godwin, the performer and songwriter?
Well, you can Google Jess Godwin. A bunch of videos come up on YouTube. A bunch. I make a lot of really fantastical, weird videos in my bedroom with flowers and lights. I know it's not how it sounds. Or you can Google me at www.jessgodwin.com or on Instagram and Twitter, it's This Bit of Earth. If you know Secret Garden,
yeah.
Mary asked Dr. Craven for a bit of earth, and that's been kind of a thing for me.
I love it.
You also finding my bit of earth, I guess.
I also don't want to bet. I was kind of a part of one of those projects because you decided to write some music with messages from people in your life. And so you came over to my place one day. We sat down for an hour or so, and we just talked about relationships and things. And you used that to inspire a song that I'm still waiting that it should win a Grammy.
Oh, I do. I need to record that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was part of my Muses project where I interviewed a bunch of people over the course of the past year and wrote songs based on that. And I loved your song. It was called Spark.
Right.
But we can't tell people about it yet because we have to wait for it to come out.
So we'll do that. But what's interesting was we talked and Spark was a word that I used in our discussion.
Yeah.
And that's what struck you. And because I didn't know what you were going to do. I didn't know that song. And then you had an event where I attended and that's how I heard the song. And that was like, here's the unveiling of the song. My whole point is everything you do is just really cool. And
thank you.
So we could YouTube you. Okay. But really this is about this weekend. So remind listeners again, we know it's at the Athenaeum Theater. We know it's Thursday through Sunday. Let's just tell them where they can go get the tickets because that's what they need to do because the money's going to a good place. It's not just going in your pocket. It's going to help kids. So where can they do that?
So they can go on athenaeumtheater.org. I believe it's .org. If it's not .org, it's .com. I'm
right.
So sorry. I'm not looking at a computer right now. But you can also Google Miss Labeled. It's M-I-S-S Labeled. It's one word. Get it? It's a pun on words.
I get it.
or if you go on to my Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, I've been talking about it a lot recently. But you'll probably be able to get tickets at the door, I'm thinking. We're looking good right now. As of today, we are good for 5 schools. So if we sell up the entire weekend, we're going to be able to go to 10 schools in CPS in January. So right now we're at 5, which is amazing. And what was so cool is we contacted CPS or Communities and Schools on Monday, and they released the information to the schools, and I got 7 requests in one day from schools. So, it's
really cool.
Exciting. So come
check
to the
it
show.
Out. And by the way, I plan to get there. I'm hoping to do this on Sunday for my own schedule, but by the way, it's athenaeumtheater.org. I wanted to check that out. And they spell theater
Thank
the
you.
Right way. It's T-R-E, not that American T-E-R stuff. It's that British T-R-E stuff.
I'm so with you on that.
athenaeumtheater.org. Jess, congratulations on this project. Congratulations on just this ongoing, amazing career that I love watching and playing a little small part of here and there from time to time is really a thrill for me. And you're just really inspiring. And I hope everybody checks this out and gets to one of those shows because you spent an evening with Jess and you kind of change a little bit. You make me want to do good for other people. And that's not easy to do.
Oh, Paul, I like you so much. I really do.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jess Godwin, check her out. AthenaeumTheater.org. That's the easiest place to do it this weekend, so don't miss it. But if you do miss it for some reason because you didn't listen to it until it was too late, this podcast, then check her out and check out her music because she's really cool. Jess Godwin, thank you, and break a leg.
Thank you.
Break a leg, as they
say. All right, thanks.
All right, bye. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @PaulLisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnick.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.